Hello, everyone. Welcome to the happiest pod on earth. I'm Steph. I'm an educator who uses passions and fandoms to help my students grow and learn about themselves and the world around them.
And I'm Ariel, a licensed therapist who uses clients' passions and fandoms to help them grow and heal from trauma and mental unwellness.
Here at Happiest Pod, we dissect Disney mediums with a critical lens.
Why? Because we're more than just fans, and we expect more from the mediums we consume. Speaking of consuming, what are we discussing today, Steph?
What a perfect word to describe what we are talking about today. We are talking about food, specifically Yes. Disney food, obviously, but I feel like this is a long time coming. We have not touched upon this, despite the fact that we've done multiple panels at Comic-Con about food and its impact culturally, socially, mentally, physically. I mean, everything. Food is life, right? That's the saying.
Yes. And here, we even did a presentation at Geek Therapy's Tags on using food in the classroom and using food in the therapy and talking about ways to address individuals who might have various forms of eating disorders or individuals who want to embrace the culture of their food, but they don't know how.
Food itself has many different dimensions. I mean, people love it. They make livings around it. We love to consume it. It brings people together. I mean, as you said, I talked about how food in the classroom and food when it comes to translating what it means for kids is so important as they grow and develop, and their relationship with food too. So I think it is fitting as we are coming into the spring season now here in California, and specifically at Disneyland and the parks here in LA, that we really start to see the parks ramping up on food and putting food in as like something to drive people to get to the parks, which has definitely worked on me.
Yes. Okay. So starting with the parks specifically, right now we are during the middle or just starting Food and Wine Festival, which I don't think we've talked about on the show before, correct?
No, we haven't. We've done many different events that are very similar to Food and Wine, but correct me if I'm wrong, everyone out there, and you know, my co-host as well. I feel like Food and Wine Festival was kind of like the genesis of people coming to the parks specifically to have specialty foods, specialty wine and beverage. Especially since California Adventure in itself, I think going with the theme of California and how we are, what, the largest in the United States of America, and that we have such a large culinary scene. We have many celebrity chefs who live out here and make a living out here. They really wanted to capitalize that with the California theme. So, yes. You know, you see there's a winery in the middle of the park. You can drink alcohol in the park. There's specialty restaurants like the Trattoria, which is Italian inspired. You have different areas of the park where you can get different sorts of regional foods that you wouldn't otherwise find at Disneyland.
And this year, theme is it's avocado time. Avocado shaped like clock. Interestingly though, there are not many avocado items, or that's not the main ingredient in most of the dishes, at least what we saw on the menu and what we tried. I don't remember like avocado being so featured, and yet that is the theme and that is the merchandise.
Which, yeah, I think this is the first time they had a hard theme for Food and Wine Festival. Normally it's just here, come try regional foods. It's happening. And for all of you who don't know about the Food and Wine Festival, basically every single year they line the main veranda, the main street of California Adventure Park. They line them up with these little booths that you can purchase small kind of tapas like items, very small. You can share them if you want. But yeah, the Food and Wine Festival gets you certain dishes that you can use the little tabs to redeem. It does exclude alcohol, and it does exclude some other dishes that you would have to go to the restaurant to get. So it's not just the little booths that have themed items, but also the restaurants that already serve things like in San Francisco or the plaza in the back, the Garden Plaza, I think, but not necessarily with the little sip and saver pass. A lot of rules.
Yeah, which I think is a little, the marketing calling it Food and Wine Fest and not including the wine. I don't know if that's the smartest thing, but right, it doesn't bother me because I don't drink. And what I do know is I feel like this year it's expanded even more in more tiny booths. I think last year I don't remember as many booths. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I just feel like it's grown in the amount of options that you don't have to go up to the booth to order your like each individual item. You can just find one booth, order them all there, take your tickets and go retrieve them, which is such a time saver, because when I first did Food and Wine Fest with you, I remember waiting in each line to try and get our food.
Yeah, like you would basically be hungry by the time you got to the next thing. again. You would keep just getting hungry and then being satiated and then hungry again. But that comes with a disclaimer too, because as I learned during Lunar New Year, you can only get certain things pre-ordered. Mm-hmm. And some things are excluded from that, which I unfortunately had not the best interaction with a cast member when it came to that. I think because it was so busy, this was during Lunar New Year, and I did not know the rules, and the little booklet that they give you kind of explains it, but I think they did a better job explaining it this time for Food and Wine Festival. But yeah, you have to look for the little, there's like an icon that says where you can pre-order things, and if that item doesn't have an icon, you're most likely going to have to stand in line. But I think it is a step forward in trying to save people money and time, because not only are you foregoing writing things and foregoing other experiences to do this, but you are also, you know, if you have a park hopper, this is like the majority of your time just trying to figure out what you're going to eat and where you're going to eat it at.
Mm-hmm. So in the Food and Wine Fest, maybe like in the past now, what comes up to your mind is like the top eats that you've had, or maybe like the different kiosks or booths that you prefer to stop at?
Mm-hmm. So I think they've organized it like consistently over the years. I always know there's a spicy booth, which I avoid at all costs. I know that there is one that's dedicated to like a beer flight and a wine flight, which back then I'd be like, let's get it all. But now I'm like, okay, I'm going to choose between the two. But there's also one that always has like the most savory dishes. I think before they've had like Filipino pork belly over garlic rice. That's one of my favorites, only because I was so surprised that they were doing cultural foods in addition to just, you know, California cuisine, which I can never define myself being from California. They always call California cuisine. Okay. But that's one of my favorites. I know they've also had a, I've also had like a burrito. I think it's also pork belly. Clearly eat a lot of pork. My favorite dishes are the ones that you get the most bang for your buck, which comes with, you know, like a good protein and like a good side. Okay. How about you?
I always like anything with the mac and cheese. So far I've never not enjoyed a mac and cheese. That's what we tried in this most recent Food and Wine Fest. And then usually the desserts are good. There's always like a cream type dessert. There's always a, I would say like a cookie type dessert. I remember like the macaroons being like the things that I enjoy the most. And they're huge. They're always huge Mickey shaped macaroons. Mm-hmm. However, I think we tried a dessert this year that was just subpar. So when we go back for Dapper Day, we're gonna have to reclaim the dessert section, go through it. I think there was like a passion fruit one that someone said that they liked, so we might try that I think this year.
Yeah, definitely. And if you would like to know what that was, if you are going to Food and Wine Festival, we did try the lemon olive oil cake. It was lemony. It wasn't very olive oily. It was kind of dry, to be honest. And it pales in comparisons to all the other Disney desserts that we've had. And I think that's,
can you explain what it was, like what an olive oil cake is? Because I don't know if some people might know what that is. They might think olive oil only with cooking.
Right, yeah. So olive oil cake is something specifically in Italian cooking, because they use olive oil so much in their baking and cooking that they add olive oil to a traditional cake mix to make it more moist. So if you imagine like the most moist cake you've ever had, even like if it's like a birthday cake or even, you know, like a small layered cake, imagine that but more savory because it has the olive oil in it. So I've had olive oil cake in Italian, delectable, and every bite is just, it's full. It's like very, very rich, and normally I see it in chocolate cakes. I've never really had an olive oil cake that wasn't chocolate. I've seen them, but I haven't had them personally, but it brings out so many more notes of the chocolate because chocolate is so multidimensional. But yeah, I thought that I was gonna get the same experience with this lemon olive oil cake, and I was thirsty after the first bite. I'm like, what is going on? It was cute though. It was cute.
It was very photogenic, very eye-worthy. And I think like back to other Food and Wine Fests that we've had or other events at the park that had food featured in them, there's always like a hit or a miss, right? And I remember the last Food and Wine Fest, a bread thing that had hot dogs in it was not it.
I was thinking, I want to say it was the Chinese sausage one, but I'm not sure.
Yes, that was it. I remember not liking that. And then it's new in the park now, but we tried it at Disney Channel night. It was the Mickey shaped pr- pretzel pepperoni thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Pepperoni pretzel. It's cute. It's not, it didn't taste like amazing or wonderful. I you're supposed to dip it in the marinara sauce, and that's what makes it taste more like, I guess, a pizza and not just pepperonis on bread. I don't think that was a miss for me. But on Disney Channel night, we definitely tried one really, really good item that was a surprise that we didn't even expect.
Delicious things I've ever had in my history of going to Disneyland. So much so that I am determined now to make it myself. So I know we're going to talk about Disney Channel night on another episode, but I do have to mention this because it was just, it blew us all away.
Yes.
So everything that night had a 90s theme to it. So like Ariel said, the pepperoni pizza was kind of like eating pizza bagels after school.
Yeah.
That's what I likened it to.
Yeah. And they had a cosmic brownie, you know, adult cosmic brownie, which does not mean there's cannabis in it.
I think it was because so that's really funny that you mentioned that, because Cosmic Brownie is a Little Debbie brownie, but because it was Disney Channel night and everything's basically like late 90s early 2000s, the Y2K thing, so no, it did not have fun stuff in it, and I don't think Disney's ever gonna do that for us. But no. they had a version of TV dinners, things that you would basically watch if you were watching Disney Channel after school, things you'd eat, and then they would theme some of them after some of the movies, and because not every movie was represented either with like a backdrop or with, you know, an like an experience, they made some of the food themed. So what we had was the Johnny Tsunami hot dog, and basically what it was it was Hawaiian rolls as the bread. It was Portuguese sausage, which is very popular and very common to find in Hawaii, and it also had chopped up macaroni salad, which is a very Hawaiian thing, and chopped up pineapples. And I'm gonna refrain from any expletives, but it was so delicious. I think we all looked at each other like, what?
We were shocked, and it was not something that we were thinking of getting originally, because all the top items were at the Hungry Bear restaurant, and everyone was ordering on the app. That was pretty much the only way you were going to get your food. And so I wanted to try and find something, and I saw that the refreshments cafe had the Johnny Tsunami sandwich, and I was like, that sounds cool. So it wasn't even on our list like high items to get. When I was looking at the map that we were given, it wasn't pictured. There were like food items they were highlighting. It wasn't one that they were highlighting, but I was just like, okay, this will be for us to all have something different when we sit down and eat. And I'm so glad we got it, because it was the best thing.
It was the best thing. And I mean, we were just hungry at this point, because we had been lining up for all sorts of like photo ops and nonsense. It was already like getting into the night, and we were there watching Perry the Platypus just like rile up this crowd, and we're just like, we need to eat. And we're all just on our apps, the four of us, and we're just like, what can we order like right now? And then so Ariel split up and went over to the refreshment corner. We got stuff from the Tomorrowland Terrace.
Galactic Grill.
Yep. And like when we all put all of our food together, that was literally like, I could have fought somebody for that.
Yes. Yes. So good. Totally that should be a staple.
Absolutely. And Johnny Tsunami is one of my favorite Disney Channel movies of all time, and underrated, obviously, but they really redeemed it at Disney Channel night with this hot dog. It was so good.
Well, and speaking of like the park foods, there are popular snacks that people go to get regularly. So when you go to Disneyland, what do you immediately think, I have to eat?
I mean, I have to have a corn dog. And now I know that you and I get corn dogs at different places.
We do.
We do. So Ariel, where do you get your corn dogs? Because I know you're a corn dog fan.
Oh, I get it at the stage door. Yes. I get it at the stage door. And I don't sit in, I used to sit inside and watch the show. Now I'm just like at their mobile pickup area, and I'm grabbing it and going. I honestly thought that was the only place that you could get a corn dog. And then I talked to you.
So I get mine from the Little Red Cart. Before it was called the Little Red Cart, it was just literally the corn dog cart, because they have the best breading and it's always fresh, but there's always a line. Now, there used to not be a line back when I would get it as a kid, but it's literally, they only have corn dogs. And I also get the fried chicken right behind it, because that fried chicken is so good, and it's like the best meal for like when you're probably more than halfway through your day at the park and you just need the most hearty thing. And you get two pieces of fried chicken with a side of veggies, mashed potatoes, and it is so good for families because you can share. And in the morning, I think, is a buffet, but later on you can walk up cafeteria style. And those are like my two favorite things to eat at the park for like the morning and the afternoon time. time, but the clam chowder is also one of my staples. I have to get clam chowder if I can hack it, even if it's a hot day. I'll wait until like midnight or right before they close to get clam chowder over at the Royal Street Veranda right next to Pirates mm-hmm. of the Caribbean.
Okay. I'm less meal oriented and more like snack oriented. So I always get a mint julep and beignets, and I'll try the seasonal ones, but I really always just like a regular beignet and a mint julep. And always popcorn. Sometimes mm-hmm. sometimes I'm buying the popcorn buckets, right? And that's an extension of like food fandom, is buying like themed popcorn buckets. But I'm pretty much always eating a popcorn. I used to always eat a churro. Now I really like more of the salty flavor. And if I get a churro, it's because someone's splitting with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a good friend. He is the churro connoisseur every time he goes to Disneyland. I think we had to, it was either a challenge that he was going to eat like all the churros, but I think it was at the time where they were raising churro prices, because once upon a time churros used to only be $3.75 and now they're the what, up to $7 now, I think, is that
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is wild to me. And I think it's because now they have themed churros, right?
Well, and I think with the corn dog and the churro, something that you have shared with me is that your sister-in-law talks about like, sustainability at the parks. And so if you are somebody who doesn't want to have like high waste, that mm-hmm. those would be good items to get, because the corn dog is just on a stick and the churro is just in a little flimsy paper, right?
Yeah, definitely. And they're portable. So you're really... like consuming these things as you're waiting in line for a ride, or if you're mm-hmm. waiting for the parade, or you know, some sort of attraction that requires you just standing around. It's very convenient. So I mm-hmm. think definitely with managing expectations, as we've talked about before, you really want to put that in the forefront of your mind before you figure out your food route. I would just reserve days to just eat and not do anything else. I would just have Disney mm-hmm. food days, where like we would go over to Trader Sam's over at the Disneyland Hotel, and we would get a reservation there. And Trader Sam's is a really cool tiki bar that's interactive, and mm-hmm. you can get not just, you know, very good alcoholic drinks, but they do have a lot of Polynesian food that you can get only there and not at the park. Mm-hmm. So I would mm-hmm. go over there, and then we would just go up and down Main Street and just try food. But I know if you are just going for like a 3-day trip or maybe just a 1-day trip, it's really hard to do all of that stuff. You really have to be mindful of where you're going.
And I think that portability you talked about is important, because it also depends on the type of theme park attendee you are. If you are mm-hmm. not an annual pass holder and this is about the only time you're going to make it to the park, or if you are flying in, you may not want to do a reservation. It might be good if you want to take a break, but if you're trying to get on as many rides as you can, you might want to bring your own snacks or get some of the snacks that you can walk around with, or split up your party depending on how big it is and have some sit down and have some wait in line and do a switch.
Yeah, and I do like how you mentioned that, because yes, the food prices have changed drastically in the past couple years. Mm-hmm. So if you are on a budget, which I have been, I remember going to Disneyland with just $20 to spend, grabbing snacks and, you know, packing your own meal, that's totally doable. I've seen many people on social media even bring their own rice to accompany with their food, because some food just tastes better with rice. And even condiments,
fried
bring
chicken.
Your own tortillas, fried chicken, yeah, all of that stuff. I think, you know, Disney is not a big stickler for bringing in snacks, obviously, because there are lots of kids that go to the park and, you know, mm-hmm. they would like specific snacks that you might not find. And also mm-hmm. milk and juice is very expensive at the park, so I always bring my own for my kids, and, you know, little things for them to snack on while they're waiting for a ride or a parade or something. You know, really being mindful of how much you want to spend at the park, knowing that a churro is $6 to $7 now. If yep. you're getting a meal, you are spending at least $20 for yourself for a meal. Mm-hmm. And if you are so lucky to get a dinner reservation at the Blue Bayou, or, you know, somewhere really fancy like Carthay Circle, you would need to factor that into your culinary day. Not to say that none of it is worth it, because it's all worth it, but, you know,
yeah.
Just so that you know what you're getting into is the biggest thing.
Yeah, I think when it comes to specifically planning the parks and making sure that you have both the time, but also the energy. One of the things that is always surprising to me is how much I can eat when I'm at Disneyland compared to at home. Because of all the walking I'm doing, I need to sort of make sure that I'm always putting something in my system to be able to have the energy to do all of the park things. The thing is, if you go on the app and you look at the reservations, it will list list vegetarian or vegan options. It will list allergy-friendly mm-hmm. options, but it'll also list the restaurants that have cross-contamination. So if your allergy is very severe, that's another reason why people will also bring in their own food to mm-hmm. ensure safety, and why Disney isn't going to say like no to other people bringing in their own snacks and food. So you could pretty much bring your own. I know that, Steph, you have brought like a cooler and put it into, with ice in it, and put it into the lockers before, keep like mm-hmm. milk and drinks cold, and then had like a designated time to go and grab the food and picnic.
Yeah, way back when I was younger, obviously Disneyland was cheaper, but you know, as you know, my mom was very frugal. She would pack mm-hmm. us lunch, and we would keep mm-hmm. it in a locker. And right next to Disneyland entrance and the lockers is a picnic area, and mm-hmm. we would bring like, you know, any sorts of food. I remember one time we brought even El Pollo Loco to the parks, and we would take it out, and then we would eat it for lunch so that we didn't have to buy food there at the park, and then we would just re-enter. I was no stranger to that other when I was younger. I still see mm-hmm. people do it now, especially if they're going on like a school group, or you know, like a small organization where like the kids are going for like a certain thing. Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, I've seen them all use that picnic area, and you know, you don't yeah. need to reserve it. It's just kind of like a park, like an actual park, and you mm-hmm. you could just chill there and then eat, and then just put your stuff right back in the locker, and they won't ask you for, you know, any sort of time limit or anything like that. They still have it to this day, which is really cool.
Yeah, so we've talked about food in the park, bringing your own, and then special foods. We've talked about food events in the park. And as we mentioned, that food is more than, like, fandom-wise, more than just the food. There's also the mm-hmm. food that is themed and food that we want to try that is in our favorite shows and movies. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious for you, in the parks, when there are themed foods based off of stuff, like, what comes to your mind when you think of that? Because I think of, like, going into the pizza place in... Pizza what is it Planet. Called? Is it called... Yeah, Pizza Planet. Yeah, I think of Pizza Planet when I think of like a food that was from a movie or show that now I might have access to, or the shawarma mm-hmm. cart in
mm-hmm. Avengers
campus over at California Adventure. Like those are like places that now I'm getting to actually visit.
Mm-hmm. I immediately think of the Blue Bantha milk. That's the first thing that comes to mind, because I mean, when they made Galaxy's Edge, it was so immersive, and that was so different from everything. Because mm-hmm. when I went to, you know, my idea of going to Disneyland is going to different regions of the world. So if mm-hmm. I were in New Orleans Square, I knew I was going to get like gumbo or jambalaya or something, beignets that I don't normally get here in LA. Or even if I went to like Adventureland, I'll get like, you know, Dole Whip, because I don't normally have Dole Whip back home. So when Blue Bantha milk came up at Galaxy's Edge, I was like, this is like a Star Wars food that is now yeah. in my hand. Like, that's wild. Like, it's crazy to me. And I was like, what is it even made of? Do I even care at this point? I don't care. It's gold and it tastes delicious.
It tastes like a Jolly Rancher.
Bantha looks like. It tastes like a Jolly Rancher. And I love that it has like almond milk options. Like, it's non-dairy and mm-hmm. it's super refreshing, because I remember it being so hot when Galaxy's Edge opened that I was constantly just like thirsty and sweaty. But yeah, I think they did a really great job with not just the Bantha milk at Galaxy's Edge, but also the Ronto wraps there, because it really takes you out of, you know, this is regular food that we find here, obviously, because yeah. they can make it in a kitchen in the world that we live in. But I can think I'm eating something else, and I don't attune it to a specific culture. This is purely mm-hmm. fantastical, and I thought that was really cool.
Yes. Yeah, I think fantastical for me would also include like Pim's Test Kitchen, where mm-hmm. they have like the very giant pretzel or the very tiny egg. I had breakfast there, and it was like a little egg that fit in like a spoon. It was hilarious. And again, even though it was real food, it was the thought that it might have been like expanded or shrunk down.
Yeah. I have a little bone to pick with that tiny, tiny egg. Being so hungry in the morning, I'm like, I want breakfast. And of course you're going for the novelty of it, right? But yes, like when I got this quarter size of an egg, I'm pretty sure it's a quail egg, because there is no way that you got that from a chicken. I was like, what is this? How much did I pay for this? But then you see the gigantic pretzel and how it's like hanging off of like a hook, and it's like the size of my torso. And you're like, all right. Mm-hmm. This is worth it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of pretzel.
And the ridiculously large chicken patty.
That was the best. I think, yeah, it's as big as your head. I'm pretty sure whatever chicken that came from was like the largest chicken in the coop. But yeah, you're right. Pim's Test Kit, I think they got really creative with that. And I mean, the novelty of it, it stuck because it was so cool. I know that there's the Pizza Planet's really good too, but I wish they had an arcade in there because Pizza Planet mind was like a Chuck E. Cheese almost, an amusement center. So I think if they had that, that would definitely like create the whole entire scenario for myself.
I still, and maybe this is over in Paris Disney, but I wish that they had a Remy's kitchen of some kind for like French from Ratatouille in our park.
No, they do.
Like
in Paris.
When I think of Disney and food, that's that Tiana and Remy are what come up in my mind as like the movies for Disney and food.
Yes, I have had the privilege to go to Disneyland Paris, and yes, they do have a restaurant that you have to reserve for. It's at the end of the Ratatouille ride, but I haven't been. But I will try to go this time when I go to Disney World. But now that they have the Ratatouille ride in the Paris part of Epcot, I know that they have food as well right next to it because they've always had Parisian food there and I've had it there, but I just don't know if they do tattooey or like something from the movie, but I will find out and I will report back to you.
Yes,
Tiana's kitchen. Okay, I'm gonna get a little critical now because
we examine with a critical lens.
Yes, I was so excited for Tiana's Kitchen. I mean, it just made sense to make that area in front of Haunted Mansion into her place. And now that they're doing Tiana's Bayou Ride, which is formerly Splash Mountain, I was so excited for the food. However, I took a trip to New Orleans earlier at the end of last year.
And a bad move.
Bad move. But I've always wanted to visit New Orleans, and it is a beautiful city. If you ever get to go, oh my gosh, it is full of culture, full of life. The food is out of this world. Just everything that you imagine that you saw while you were watching Princess and the Frog, that's literally what it comes with the music and the spices and just their use of seafood and everything. It was so good. And then I tried Tiana's Kitchen, and man, I was like, this is not as good as what I wanted it to be. I know that Disney tries its best to represent regional food, and they've done that very successfully in many ways. We just mentioned the Polynesian Johnny Tsunami Dog, which hit it out of the park. But I think to pay homage to New Orleans, which is such a huge culinary city, I think they definitely need to step it up a little bit. I get it. Mm-hmm. There's demand out there. It's always busy. You can only churn out so many beignets and so much gumbo and so much shrimp and grits at once. But because they've done such a good job at California Food and Wine Festival, I definitely think that they can do a little bit more improvement because my shrimp and grits were okay. Yeah. I ate it, but it was lacking seasoning. It was lacking depth. It was, you know, the portion was good, but I think the only thing that I liked was probably the vegetable gumbo because kind of can't go wrong with that. And I know, Ariel, you had this, was the lemon icebox beignet, which ended up being kind of sloppy and wet by the end of it because of all of the, you know, icing. But yes. I know you had it. So what was your opinion on it?
It tasted good, but you would have to eat it right away. I would say that's something that you should order second, like go back and get it versus ordering it with your meal, unless your meal is that dessert or you eat fast. A beignet is just as good as warm as it can be. Like that's pretty much it. And then when you have a liquid, like if it's stuffed with something or has a cream of some kind, that's going to detract from like the fried part of the beignet. Mm-hmm. I would say Tiana's place is where you want to go if you want to meet a princess and you cannot wait in line. So it's a great for accommodations, especially if you're like a wheelchair user or if you are a walker user. That's going to be a place where you can sit down because Tiana comes to your table and she comes to every table. She will talk to you. She will take pictures with you and she asks you about the food. She'll joke with you. Like that's the immersive part of that environment. The food, and I have seen some cast members who are who work in the kitchens, who are chefs or sous chefs or cooks in the kitchen, and they have said that they cannot make the spicy simply because they get so many complaints about it. So if you're looking for like authentic Creole New Orleans cuisine, don't go to Disneyland. Like that's the fantasy. If you are looking for just something that will satiate you, that tastes fine, it's not bad, and you can meet a Disney princess without having to leave your seat, that's what you're gonna want to do with Tiana's place. And you talked about like the spicy cart over. I think the other thing what people have said online is because more people, if they have to choose to visit a park, will choose Disneyland only, that they cater to a general audience. Whereas the California Adventure does have the opportunity opportunity to cater really towards California natives mm-hmm. and people in the West Coast, which means that their food gets to be more expansive. And when you have an event of some kind, like you said, it's limited in how much they're going to make. Whereas a kitchen that is going to stay has to keep churning out the same thing, and it has to taste mm-hmm. the same every single time. So it's a worthwhile criticism. If you've never been to New Orleans, you're not going to know the difference. If you have been to New Orleans, you're going to know the difference.
Right. You are definitely right. I think the experience of meeting Tiana there, unfortunately, when I went, it was a rainy day. There was a storm coming and there was no music. It was just the food. There was no Tiana because the rain started coming down. And like normally when rain happens, many of the characters, many of those experiences just go away. And so we really wanted to try it because last time when we were to try it, which was funny enough, before I went to New Orleans, I missed the closing of the restaurant because it was still new and it closed at 8 and we had gotten over there at like 9 and I'm like, oh dang, it's closed now. So I mean, that would have definitely been a different experience, but at the same time, I think that you're right, Disneyland catering to a general audience is what they're there for, because they are the ones, this is the original. There's only so much that Disneyland can do, which is why they have specialty places like California Adventure or mainly even Epcot. I know that I've had such great regional food over at Epcot at Disney World because they have chefs from that specific country. They have people who work there from mm-hmm. that specific country that are on like a Disney college program or, you know, through Disney so that they can share their culture with the world. So there are different ways that Disney is trying to represent different countries in very respectable ways. Mm-hmm. But I think definitely this would probably be a gateway into, let me see what Creole food is actually like. But I think that little voice in the back of my head, knowing that Tiana was a chef and that yes. she was very proud of her food, and the whole movie was her trying to achieve her dreams of making that restaurant. If I knew Tiana, maybe she wouldn't have approved some of these dishes.
Yes, yeah. I think if we're talking about bringing the movie to life, that was not it, and that's fair.
The outside is gorgeous, though. The outside is absolutely gorgeous, especially gorgeous. At night. It's so pretty.
Yes,
we can
yes.
agree on that.
And there's room for improvement, right? It's still technically new.
Absolutely. Yes.
That's. Yeah. I think that's going to be the saving grace. Is we'll probably see the food evolve and get hopefully better. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I do think you also highlight, like, even though the foods at the parks are expensive, even if you go to, you know, Epcot in Walt Disney World, like, you may not have the money to travel to another country. This may be the only mm-hmm. time you get to experience other cultures. So mm-hmm. even if it isn't quote unquote authentic, which really hard to be if you don't even have access to the food that your region right. would have.
Like, absolutely.
For the most part, this is a great way to introduce like students, to introduce people to different cultures and different cultural cuisines mm-hmm. and talk about, you know, acceptance and diversity. I know that we've talked about this on the panel. Could you share like your experience in the classroom and with students when it comes to diverse foods or trying to celebrate different cultures and through their cuisine?
Yeah, definitely. I know that whenever you introduce food that is not school lunch into your classroom and really like for the campus, it's always a special occasion. I'm so lucky that I work for a school that highlights diversity, inclusion, and just embracing the different cultures that make up Los Angeles. And I did want to note that too, because California is such a great place to populations of cultures that have mm-hmm. enclaves that have been here for decades, hundreds of years, that, you know, mm-hmm. we can get authentic Oaxacan food just down the street. Mm-hmm. So I always tell my students that, you know, food is a part of not just everyday life, but a part of your identity. So whenever we have cultural events, we normally have festivals that highlight Asian American foods, traditionally Black foods. We do a good job, I think, in making that effort. So I think that introducing students to that is really important. And any sort of way that I can do that, whether it be making guacamole in the classroom or trying out different types of bread, incorporating that into like a history or social science lesson, because food is just a part of history. And yes. if we're losing some of those history lessons, at least we get to do it in the everyday things that we eat. So yeah, I mean, I'm pretty thankful that I get to do that. I know not other schools, some of them don't get to do that. But I mean, for you and your practice, do you ever get to talk about what food means to them and the relationship that people have with food in regards to their mental health?
Yes. So I know that a lot of my clients have experienced like grief and loss, and one of the ways that they will reconnect with the individual that has passed is they will make favorite dishes that either were significant to that person or significant to like the family and their tradition and passing down recipes. I have some clients who have some difficult experiences, and so trying to reclaim like a positive relationship with the food is not only highlighting how it does connect to your culture, but making it like fun, play-based. Kitchen where my coffee area is, I have a Funko of Deadpool as a barista. Like that's how I've like made the kitchen fun and silly. And then I used to watch Gilmore Girls, so I have a Funko of Suki, and I have a Toadstool as a chef. And so they're over by my by my stove. They're helping me cook. And so I do that's that awesome. With my clients. Is like we talk about ways to like a little bit more exciting. We talk about, you know, I don't give nutritional advice. It's not within my scope, but we talk about how they can enjoy like the food that they're eating. Maybe it's like put more colors on the plate. Maybe it's, I think the common phrasing nutritionalists use is have what you like, add what you need. So we, you know, I'll have them talk to their nutritionalists and see like what could we say that we like and then add what we need. And maybe some of the things we like is like I will change the peanut butter and jelly sandwich to the shape of like a Mario star or like the castle at Disneyland, so that I'm still eating enough protein with the peanut butter, but I don't want the crust. And it's like, okay, you don't have to have the crust. I've noticed that that is the best way to reincorporate food as not just nutritional sustenance, but as a way to embrace being alive and living. And you need it to be able to do that. It's such a vital, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, however you feel about that, it is on the base level. Like you have to be able to feed yourself. And so when you can find ways to food that you actually appreciate it, and not just the fact that it is something you put like in your body, it is just the something you check off the box of like how you stay alive, but instead like you are looking forward to it, you're savoring it. A lot of the work we do is also mindfulness based. I don't know how many times I've like had clients like stop and pause and like really smell their coffee, hold the warmth in their hand, like hold the flavor in their mouth, see if they can describe it. Those are the ways in which slowing down and accessing more language makes it easier in the long run when it comes to healing and working through trauma and talk therapy.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned slowing down and enjoying your food just to enjoy it, because not many people do that. I know for me as a mom, I stopped sitting down to eat. I eat standing up all the time, and many other moms can relate, because you just, the minute you sit down, somebody will ask you for something, somebody needs someone, someone starts crying, or somebody gets hurt. It's been a while since I've done that, and lucky for me, when I go to Disneyland, because it's either I'm with friends or with other people, I mean, when my husband's there with me, I can enjoy my food, and it's fun for me because these are foods that make me happy. Whether, you know, it's eating a themed food or eating something that's very nostalgic for myself, I can stop and enjoy it, because that's really what being at the theme park is about, right? It's just enjoying yourself in anything that you do, no matter the stress that comes along with getting there or ordering the food or waiting in line for food. You're still enjoying something that has happiness and joy in it. And so that is all a part of the park experience with, you know, the theme food and the types of food that they have at Disneyland. It's there to make us generally just happy.
Yeah. And I think even like expanding that joy of food, like we know that now there's merchandising and lining just for food. You talked about the Munchlings, and I bought a pizza backpack, headband like Mickey ears, and a shirt from their Disney Eats collection.
So let's talk a little bit about the merchandising and the marketing that is now absolutely a thing at Disneyland, because in the past years, there were no influencers, there were no theme nights, it was just going to the park and enjoying the park as a theme park. Now there's an element of niche fandoms within the park, and obviously food is one of those niches. And I don't know about you, but this whole Munchlings, like little plushies that are Disney characters mashed up with food items, I feel like it came out of nowhere. Like absolutely, it's like that meme that says no one, absolutely no one, Disney parks, let's come out with, you know, a line of plushies that look like food. That's kind of how it happened in my perception
of
it.
And like that just shows you about like food and fandom taking over, because I didn't know that I needed a Donald Duck cupcake plushie until they showed me that I could have a Donald Duck Cupcake Blushy. Yeah. And then I'm like, yeah.
Oh my gosh. I saw all of the Stitch related ones. There's like a Stitch Dole Whip. There's a Stitch Macaron. I'm like still at that point in denial that I need it. I'm like SpongeBob. We're like, I don't need it. I don't need it. If I'm going to get it, I'm going to get the actual thing and I'm going to consume it so that I can get something out of it. But they are so cute. And yes, spirit jerseys. Ears. Yeah. Ariel, you just bought the most beautiful set. It is so cute. And I think I remember when we were at the park, you were like, I'm getting it. There was just like no questions asked, right?
No. Yeah, so Disney Eats is a merchandising line that Disney is releasing every month, a new food-themed item. And the February was pizza. And I saw it and I was like, yes, I cannot not live without this. I will buy it before the end of this convention. And I did. I bought the ears. I bought the jersey. I bought the Loungefly backpack. You know, I'm walking away with pure joy. Like, I looked up when it was International Pizza Day so I could like wear this again. I really love pizza as a food. And then just to see the hidden Mickeys, like pepperonis as hidden Mickeys, it was clever. They got me. They really got me with the merchandising. I looked at some of the other foods. I may do s'mores, like they have that in December as cute. One of the food items that may be one that I also like as well. And and it's interesting, if you go on the website, it'll list the food items and they are in like a tan image, and then when they release the item, they actually replace that image with the actual item. So we'll start to
see.
Yeah, they're doing drops. Drops of their line, and it's merchandising that involves kitchenware. It's merchandising that involves clothing, sipper cups. Like, it's the whole gamut of ways to like engage with food as a product and not just as a consumable, but like a product.
It's as if they thought, oh, these millennials that now have kitchen and have incomes, let me see what they like, and let me just make this huge line about it so that every month in the year of 2020 we get them in one way or another. Do they have a preview of the type of food it's gonna be, or is it just like a silhouette of an image or something?
Oh, it is a preview, but even the preview is just a cartooned image of that food item. It isn't of like the merchandise. So if you go on our Instagram, you will see the most recent drop with the pizza ears, but if you swipe all the way to the end, you'll see what it looked like before. We have the whole list for the whole month, so you can or for every month this year, so you can see what those drops will look like.
So when is coffee month? Because they have to do that, right?
Oh, that is a good question. January was just Disney Eats collection, so that was introducing the collection. February was pizza. March is macaron. April is lollipop. Ooh. May is ice cream. So some of these matching sort of what you would eat in those months. June is donuts. July is shaved ice. August is pineapple swirl. September is caramel apple. October is churro. November is gingerbread. And December is s'mores. So all foods, no drinks.
So they're all desserts, all except for pizza.
Except for pizza. Was pizza the only
they're all desserts except for pizza. Okay. Yeah. So the theme is they're going for handheld. They're going for childlike items that kids can also partake in, which is probably why they don't have coffee. And I feel like before we've seen Disney donut ears, and some of the munchlings have been s'mores and, you know, macarons and other things. So I think they're just now maybe expanding upon what the merchandising has worked for them in the past.
Yes. And all the imagery is Mickey shaped items, with the exception of the pineapple swirl, unless there's a hidden Mickey that I can't see. So I think you're hitting on like some of the way that food is being merchandise, like that the handheld component. When I talk to my clients about trying to embrace like their inner child, when we're doing like parts work, the first thing I talk about is eat with your hands. Find a food you can eat with your hands, a messy food like spaghetti, or food that you're used to eating with your hands like pizza or fries. Because that is one of the first ways we like explore our body, is touching our mouth and putting things in our mouth. You have an infant, I'm pretty sure she puts everything in her mouth, right?
All the things. So, every of the things.
When we're talking about like nostalgia marketing, having handheld foods, wonderful. Having it be sweet, go-to treats, having it sort of match the theme of the month. I think that Disney's on brand with this marketing, and I think really shows why our panel, when we first did our food panel, why it was accepted at Comic-Con. That was the first panel that we had ever accepted at Comic-Con. It was, and it's because food is a niche culture of fandom in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm. And just as you're listing all of those foods, you could essentially say there's a fandom for every type of food that you just listed. Mm-hmm. We have pizza lovers, macaron lovers. I'm surprised they didn't have cookies. Just like regular cookies? No chocolate chip
cookies? Just gingerbread, but definitely just donuts. I think the other thing is that these are also foods you can access in the park. So they're like doubling down on the fact that these are favored foods that are to go, that are park foods as well, right?
Yeah. But yeah, absolutely. People are fans of these food. I know that we didn't really dive too deep into it, but there are fans of the different types of cold brew in the parks, because now that they've realized that cold brew is a thing that people need at the parks, whether you're a parent, whether you're just like trying to get through the day, there's different variations of cold brew that you can get in the parks, just like how you can get different variations of churros. So when you have followings of people who will like repost any sort of video that has to do with that food item, that is essentially creating a fandom of that item, that Disney now is looking at that as, hey, you know, we not only have Disney fans, but we have Disney foodies, we have Disney food fans, and for specific things. So it was very smart on their part to hone in on that.
Yeah, I think this will be our part one in a series of food as a subtopic on our Disney fandom podcast.
Clearly, we have lots to say about it. So, you know.
Now, if you are going to be at WonderCon this year, we will have our panel on March 31st. That's a Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. It'll be in room 2. And I do understand this is also Easter. So if we don't see you, that is totally fine. But if we do, you know, say hi, ask a question. We will have a variety of people on our panel, an actor, a producer, a restaurant owner, chef, a sous chef. So come and learn about food and fandom. It won't just be Disney related. It will be the whole gamut of food and fandom and the experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you have any questions, please follow us and message, like, and follow at happiestpodgt for Instagram and happiestpodgt for X. And yeah, like, let us know. What do you eat at the parks? What are your favorite foods?
Yes. And what foods are you fans of? Because as we are going to be diving into that topic at the panel, we always love hearing stories of people and their relationship to their favorite foods. It's always so great to hear, because we've all had that experience of loving food and getting joy from it that is unmatched when you eat something that brings you so much happiness that you just have to stop everything and realize that. So we're very excited for the panel, but if not, we will see you on the next episode.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.